Yeah, Big Reggie.
Yo.
My boy is alive and in the flesh. How we living, man?
Chilling. How y'all doing?
Good, man. Got my boy Dame on here.
What's going on with you, bro? Nice to meet you, man.
Yeah, man. What's good? Nice to meet you.
I'm excited for this episode. I think Dame's going to be a good addition, honestly. Funny is Reggie here. Reggie's the last person that was this excited to come on the pod for the first time. So I'm really excited to see what this is going to be.
That's a bet, man. What's up? We got to
turn to a regular.
We got to get the sports teams, the favorite sports teams, out the way before we get this going. I got to know y'all teams before. Marcus, I think I know more of your teams because you, Virginia Tech college football,
mm-hmm.
Panthers NFL,
mm-hmm.
Duke college basketball, yeah?
Yeah.
Okay. And I don't even know the rest.
Hornets, NBA.
Oh, goodness. 68 points.
Yeah, chill out. Preseason. And then I'll be fucking with the Marlins in baseball, but you know, them niggas are ass.
Oh, not the Marlins. All right, Reggie, who your teams, man?
Blitzburg, Steelers gang all day long.
Oh, we could end it right here.
Duke basketball.
Okay.
South Carolina Gamecocks football. I don't really have an NBA team. I used to be a Phoenix Suns fan. I was a huge Steve Nash fan, but just kind of been bouncing around watching who I like. I don't really support anybody, truthfully.
So who's your favorite player right now? Like, who would you say, like, if you had to root for a team that you rooted for your favorite player, who would it be?
My favorite player is probably Luka.
Okay. I like that. Luka. I have some thoughts on Luka. You know,
I'm a huge KD fan too.
Ooh.
But yeah.
That's what's up. Well, definitely I'm a Panthers fan. You know, I don't know all about them Steelers or whatever. But we all can agree on Duke though. I appreciate that. You know, so college basketball will be nice watching it this season. Hopefully we can make it back into the tournament. Last year was pretty tough. Ohio State football fan though.
Oh my damn. God.
Yeah. And I need y'all to take note, man. I need y'all to take note because if you bring me on these podcasts for any time during the season, bro, I'm gonna plead my case, man. I'm gonna plead my case for sure. Basketball is the Chicago Bulls. Very excited about our off season. I think I got us fourth or fifth in the East this year. But
I said the same thing yesterday.
I got us fourth or fifth in the East. I some folks have told me that they got us in the 6, 7, 8 range. And I don't know about that. And then my baseball team is the Red Sox, you know, future World Series champions in 2021. So you know what it is, man.
Bet. Well,
wait, repeat that one more time.
You talking about all the teams or the last one?
The last thing you said.
Yeah, I'm a Red Sox fan, the future 2021 World Series champions. You feel me?
Mm-hmm.
Who's heard that before? You said heard it before.
I've heard that. I can't talk about my team. I watch.
Who is your team?
I watch the Pirates.
So, oh, yeah. Y'all are watching the playoffs just like you. That's what's up, though, bro.
Man. Welcome to episode 83 of the Pickup Podcast. Your boy Marcus here. Co-host Reggie back in the building. Got a brand new guest in here. My boy, Big Dame. Dame Peoples in the building. Turn it up. Glad to have you. And we're going to get into, you know, that John Gruden, the emails. Release the emails. The Washington football team investigation that went along with that. And just some general college football, NFL talk. And going to get into a little bit of the MLB playoffs. So I know we haven't been touching on that recently. But, yeah, there's some shit going on. We got to talk about it, man. So after this little message, we'll be right back. My boys. All right, so straight up off the rip, Reggie, you've been following the John Gruden thing?
For the most part.
Dane, you've been following it?
Definitely been following it closely. At first, I was like just making note of it, but when he resigned, I definitely had to do my research.
Yeah, it's honestly a lot more to the story than even what's being released. And I just want to say we're talking about John Gruden right now. That's the kind of the headline leading into this. But Dan Snyder is a fucking menace. How he keeps getting away with this shit. And what's that mean? He can't keep getting away with this. Because how did this turn into a Washington football team investigation over a litany of shit, and the headline comes out to John Gruden and him resigning over some emails? I don't know how he keeps getting away with it. I mean, I do know he's in – look at the city he's in, the media influence he has. That's all I'm going to say about that. But, man, but getting straight to the John Gruden emails, you know, obviously there's talk going back. Keyshawn Johnson saying from back in his days in Tampa, he was like John Gruden comes off as a fraud. Obviously, he's an old school type of dude. So you can definitely tell he probably has some strong opinions about things. Misogynistic, homophobic, things he said about obviously drafting a player, Michael Sam at the time, talking about seven, 8 years ago. And yeah, it's kind of hard seeing that he's saying that kind of stuff and that he's got the only openly gay player in the league starting for him on his defensive line. He's got to go and see that nigga practice every day. It's crazy to me, man. It's crazy to me. No cap. So, I mean, what y'all think about it, man?
Reggie, I'll let you go first for sure, man.
Honestly, to me, it's not surprising at this point. It's very surprising how it's being handled, but the situation in general is something being leaked of a higher-up in the NFL having some small de facto interesting thing happening to turn out to be this huge long line of racism, homophobic, misogynist, all the big things that we know are there. But of course, all it takes is one small crack in the system, and then what we all know is true comes out, that it's really not that bleak of a thing. It's happening every day, all day long in these higher up systems. And I just feel like for the NFL and ESPN and truthfully everyone involved in the situation to handle it so poorly at this point, I just hope that it continues to damn everyone involved.
I could definitely agree on that. You know, agree with some of those things. The whole thing about it all, you know, the act, the crime, what happened was definitely wrong. There's no right, you know, right or wrong there for having it for 7 years of just documented, you know, slurs, whether they're, you know, homophobic, racial, whatever the case is. It's just having that documentation for that long a time. Like Reggie said, it's not necessarily surprising, right? But for me personally, it was a little bit surprising of who the emails were about. Not saying that, you know, I was super sold on John Gruden being, you know, a people type guy, but he's an entertainer. He's an actor, and he could really put on a facade. And obviously, we are seeing that he's probably put on many facades over the years, you know, whether he's in the Monday night booth or whether he's, you know, on the field. I've even heard an analyst go as far as say that he was one of the best entertainers as a Monday night, you know, analyst, even over John Madden. Now, take that how you may. Regardless of the thing is it's wrong on John Gruden. But back to what Marcus was saying, I believe that this is the tip of the iceberg of something that Dan Snyder is finally going to get caught up with something that he has going on. Because as he said, this is something that, you know, only came up because of the research of the Washington football team. And because of the research of the Washington football team and then finding this, the NFLPA today has, you know, created a petition that all teams have already signed to release the rest of the 690 emails over the last 7 years. And even signing another petition that says that they want to release all the emails of all league officials of all 32 teams. So, Reggie, I understand where it looks maybe right now that they're not handling it to the best of their ability. They gave John Gruden the slap on the wrist to go ahead and quit, but every job is going to do that and higher up. But I feel like they're going to make a bigger move to make a bigger example, because it's not John Gruden that's the problem. It stretches, you know, all through the NFL, but the main source of the problem, as Marcus said, is Dan Snyder. There's a lot of you know, problems in that organization over there, and the fact that you're investigating a whole different organization,
different franchises affected,
it's got to be a lot more into it.
Well, if we remember some context at the time when a lot of this was going down, you know, Gruden's brother, Jay Gruden, was head coach of the then Redskins for, what, 4 of those years?
Yeah.
Something along that time period. So I feel like this is where a lot of those might have come from. Obviously, we don't have the emails. So it's not a lot for us to talk off of knowingly. We're speculating. My speculation is a lot of these were emails probably in confidence to his brother, someone that he's probably loose with. You know, he probably let his guard down.
Oh, if I can, I hate to pause you there, but the actual source is Bill Allen, which is a executive of who he was emailing the thread to. All of the emails went to Bill Allen, who is also an executive for the Washington football team. But not only that, he was a GM for the Raiders in 2002 when John Gruden was there.
Okay, bet. So even right there, someone he's familiar with, let his guard down. You know, like you say, he's an actor, put him on a facade. Easy to let your guard down with someone that knows you beyond that. So we seeing shit like that out here. Obviously, before this weekend, there was the original report that he said about the 2011 lockout. Now, see, he wasn't even in the league at the time. He was doing Monday Night Football on ESPN. And he had the comment about the NFLPA executive, Demaurice Smith. I think that's how you pronounce his name. Talking about how he said big Michelin tire lips. And he's like, you might as well just call him big monkey nigger lips, to be honest.
Really?
And they ain't even say it. I mean, not that they didn't say it. They said things about it, but I mean, like, he ain't quit over that. The misogynistic and homophobic comments that allegedly, and they say regular. We're not talking about one-off. They said regular usage. So, I mean, I'd like to see exactly what language is, you know, detailed in that and how often regular usage is. But to be out over that, something like that, after you were getting ready to keep pressing on, after calling someone basically big nigga lips, that's wild to me, man. Like, you, it's treading on thin ice right there. There's a whole lot going on, man.
Just to go back for a second, I fully agree in total. And I guess what I was trying to say more is that exactly that, is that John Gruden is taking a bit of the scapegoat approach to this. Everyone is going to throw the flak here. Big little kind of smoke and mirrors effect to the true problem. And I guess that's more of what I was looking at, is that the true issue is correct, is that it is the Washington football team and the higher-ups there. But more so, that's not something that is what I feel is rare to NFL owners throughout the league.
Now, I was reading a report that said that, you know, obviously we remember we reported on it back when it happened in, like, 2018, when the Washington then Redskins cheerleaders were, you know, they were suing for sexual misconduct and basically more or less getting pimped out by Dan Snyder to other, like, team donors and executives and whatnot at their cheerleading camps or whatever, and some real nasty behavior. And then we're talking about in this report, they're alleging that John Gruden's out here, you know, engaging in some of that kind of stuff too, right? So a lot of stuff is being glossed over and put onto the remarks of the emails and not some of the actual real world actions that have been taken.
And I, you know, that I think that goes to what Reggie is saying, is, you know, is this is not just the first instant, even the second instant. You know, this is something that's been going on for years and years and years. And, you know, as you hear these analysts talk and some of these, you know, league executives talk, they believe that the NFL is trying to make, you know, steps of change in the league, especially what's happened in this last, you know, 2020 with Black Lives Matter and everything, and everything coming out of people being more vocal about what they are outside of the field. I think, you know, that's how they're going to make these steps to go forward, because if you're going to uncover the whole NFL from back to 2011, you're going to find a lot of ugly things. A lot of ugly things. I mean, even if you go back to the 2000s, it's going to be very ugly. You know, so it's going to be interesting to see what they do, because they don't want to hide the skeletons in their closet, you know, for the respect of their league, because I feel like the NFL has gained some of that back over these last couple of years. So it's really going to be interesting to see what they do, but I definitely agree with you, Reggie. This is definitely not something new, and if it's not going to be handled in a, you know, right precaution, I think the NFL is going to take a hit, man.
I think the question is, too, is what is the right precaution?
Yeah, yeah. Honestly.
Do you do the full Donald Sterling route with, let's say, three-quarters of the owners are full-out participant in all this kind of activity, right? The old head owners. Who knows what the fuck Jerry Jones emails look like?
Oh, shit.
Does Jerry Jones even have an email? He's probably still sending handwritten letters on Pony Express. Who knows what the fuck those look like, right? All kinds of owners. I mean, obviously the Rooney family, they've generally been like okay, right?
But see, this thing about the John Gruden thing is now we don't know what the hell is what, because we've seen a lot of families say, hey, John Gruden, obviously he's coached a lot of black players by default because, you know, it's a predominantly black sport. Yeah. But, I've watched him on Hard Knocks. I've watched him with people in the connection with, you know, these black athletes. It's a little more, you know, meets to the eye, because you would think like, oh, John Gruden is all for, you know, the people, is all for what we're trying to do. In all reality, you see, it's not even that same. So, yeah, we sit here and say the Rooney, but the Rooney could have just been logical enough to say, hey, if we promote, you know, predominantly black coaches and messing with black players and everything, we're going to have the limelight that we're not an organization that's against that. But I don't know if I can trust that anymore.
Yeah, it's kind of like pulling the wool over your eyes. You don't know who to trust. There's a lot of, like I said, so let's just say, like, in general, you got three-quarters of the league, right?
It's too much.
24 of your 32 owners are just flat-out racist, homophobic, sexist, whatever, and because they already outed Jerry Richardson, right, in Carolina, for the workplace misconduct with dealing with women in the workplace. I can very well assume Dan Snyder is next, and they've been trying to get him to sell the team or force him out for the whole Redskins name thing that he was clinging to. And he finally budged on after however many years of that. If that isn't enough, you know what I'm saying, if they expose a much larger portion of the league, how much turnover are you going to get?
Well, you know, here's the thing.
The owners run the league. The owners run the league.
That's what I'm saying. You can't – it's just similar to how the foundation of what we live in is like today. We know it's happening. We know what's going on, but what are you truly going to do about it? Because the NFL is run on these people. You can't overrun the same people that run the league. You know what I'm saying? I feel like on the back end, the reality of it all is that it kind of just is how it's going to be. At the top end of things, they're going to scapegoat out John Gruden. You're right. Dan Snyder's probably going to get the next hook because it's too much. You know what I'm saying? It's like a high society. Once enough gets out, we obviously have to push you out. But we know in the back of our minds that, like you said, a majority of these NFL owners probably do participate in these things on the regular. Loose lips, shink ships, rubber lips, Michelin lips, I don't know. All the same things.
Damn.
Long story short, I just feel like it's the same thing as the backbone of America's society. The higher-ups in politics, NBA, Jerry Richardson, all of it. It's all the same thing, you know? So,
I agree.
That's my take on it.
I agree.
And that's why I feel like it's being handled so poorly, because at the end of the day, you can't truly do anything about it. What are we going to do, cancel the NFL? Like, literally just cancel it? Sell the teams to who? It's all going to be the same circle of families, of people, just tighter ships.
There's only so many billionaire families that can, you know, buy into this kind of shit anyways. I mean,
how many non-billionaire families do you truthfully think don't participate in these things in the confines of their own trusts?
I
think that number is very slim. So in the reality of it all, it's just something you really can't avoid. I just think, obviously, we have to do better at protecting the communities and ourselves from not associating with this information. You know, once it gets out, it obviously needs to be dealt with And to me, honestly, it's sad that it's gotten to this point now that we even have this conversation where it's like, well, if the majority of the NFL owners are racist and homophobic, what do you do? Well, shit, what do you do?
I mean,
you just deal with bad people.
A lot of these people are older white men, and they grew up in a time period where that was their norm. This is a shaking of their norm. It's not like, I mean, it was wrong. Obviously, it's always been wrong. So it's not a matter of right and wrong. But there are some things that are wrong that are normal. You know what I'm saying? Like, being technical, speeding on the interstate is wrong. It's against the law. But you get in on the interstate and that says 60, and you were the one going exactly 60, everyone's going to look at you like you fucking crazy until you get the fuck out the way. Damn, you know what I mean? I'm saying, so, I mean, it's wrong. But it was their norm. And it's a lot harder for those people to shake those norms at this stage of their life they've known for 30, 40, 50, 60 plus years.
Are you also classifying those people as their families? The ones that'll inherit all of this? Their sons. You know what I'm saying?
The some people know better. Some people are the little brother. Some people, you know, can grow up and, you know, society can teach them better ways, you know, right?
But in those true high societies, it's almost like what you kind of just pointed out. Is that it's really, if it gets out, you know, it's almost just, man, I lost my point there. I'm high.
I follow where you're going with it. Because, I mean, obviously when it gets out, you know, it's just, all right, well, we just got to do something about it so we can get back to business as usual. We're not actually trying to solve the root of the problem, right? So I get that much of it. I just think that, you know, we're at a point, something has to be done. Something is going to be done, but I just fear that it won't be enough. It will be just enough to get them back to their status quo.
Well, yeah, it'll never be enough.
And everything that's going on in the league, if you've seen over the past couple of years, you know, the progress that we want to see as far as better ownership, better league management, you know, better things going on with the league is coming around slowly. You know, it's big issues, but a big issue is just another small step. And I feel like this right here, people will still say it's not handled right, it's not handled correctly. The NFL is definitely moving hesitant because, as you guys are, you know, pointing out to, they're about to spill their whole guts out, essentially. You know, just like you said, if we have 24 out of 32 teams, how do you even look at the NFL now? You know, how do you even look at what's going on? But at the same time, you know, you have to set an example. You have to do something that's going to have those owners on edge about, maybe I cannot conduct the way I'm conducting because there's so much limelight on the things that I do. Now more than ever, any sports owner, any sports executive has the limelight on them more than the players at sometimes. You know, in other past decades, they didn't have that much, you know. That's why in 2011, they weren't worried about sending emails because they had no worry of somebody going to go check it. Nowadays, you can't even like a post on, you know, on social media without them knowing and having the speculation.
Yep.
So I feel like, you know, I feel like with that, you have to use the social media weapon to continue to make a step towards it without gutting out your whole business. Because believe it or not, I believe that the NFL has been making strides to be a better league. You know, there's a lot of different things. They don't have a choice, but they do have a choice at the same time. They don't have a choice, and we could sit there and be mad, and they've done that before, but now they're making the choice to where it's an obvious decision. But like I said, that's just going to be – it's going to be a tough call. I don't know how they're going to do it. They're going to have to make some type of statement, but – lastly, I really just kind of want to—I kind of want to shed some light on. Do you think the Washington football team retiring Sean Taylor's jersey this weekend is a divergent of what's going on right now in the investigation? Do you think they're trying to celebrate something to kind of get the attention off what the real problem is?
Smoke and mirrors.
I don't think so. Isn't stuff like jersey retirement games, isn't that usually set before the season?
I believe it is, but I had to do more research. I don't know if this was a previous thing, but the way they were talking about it this morning was as if it was like a spontaneous, let's retire his jersey.
It's to me, it's like this. You have a meeting the next day after all of this starts unfolding. You have a huge meeting, comes in, morale's low, everything's low. What can we do to build everything back up? Start pitching ideas, throwing ideas out. Oh, let's fucking retire Sean Taylor's jersey. Yeah, absolutely. Yo, great. Let's get on this. you know, check the status the next day. Where did our points go? How do we move? I feel like that's how they're looking at it. It's exactly that. At the very minimum, it's some sort of reward to try to boost their image at this time of need. And you can't tell me it's not. Timing is everything.
I agree. It is, but I don't think there's a wrong time to do the right thing.
Time to do the right thing, but I'm not saying that this isn't, you can't, I'm not saying you discount it for doing the right thing. I'm saying that this is absolutely some sort of ploy to get the distraction off of what is the real problem at hand.
I agree.
I just find absolutely it very hard right to thing. Believe it's that with the time. League, with the league trying to do things, you know, like getting women involved, you know, because that was part of the emails that they were talking about. He had, I know we talked about homophobic and racist, but it was a lot of, he said, misogynistic comments, talking about how he had disdain for integrating women in refereeing, and how he didn't think that they were, you know, doing their jobs right, this, that, and the third, and things like women coaching. Obviously, Ron Rivera hired the first woman coach out there in Washington, you know, and it kind of sucks. I hate that, you know, he's kind of getting dragged through this because this isn't his culture problem. This isn't something that I, from my experience of having Ron Rivera coach my team, I haven't seen anything like this from him. So I kind of hate that he's getting wrapped up in all this, but I don't know, man. It's kind of heavy. It's heavy. It's obviously beyond sports. You know, this is way beyond sports. But fuck it, man. Fuck them niggas.
Shut down John Gruden. Do you shut down the Washington football team?
That's what I'm saying. Can you even give them a team like that the death penalty? There's so much that would shake up because, one, you have an uneven number of teams in the league, uneven, like, divisions, right? So we're going to go back to straight sports competition. All right, now you got a team with only three teams in the division, a league only, you know, three teams in the division, 31. And how you going to do scheduling? Because scheduling is all, you know, basically nice and neat off the fourth,
well,
you know, six division games and then the other division opponents, conference opponents, then you get the out-of-conference opponents. Like, it's all very organized, right? That shit would fuck a lot of shit up just to pull that out. Like, you just axe a team. Or you would force them to sell and move somewhere else and then strip them of their team history. I think that'd be probably more appropriate.
I would say, yeah, you immediately start funding that situation. Well, but, like, obviously this is at the peak of things, you know? I'm not saying we do this now, but I'm saying this is what we know is going to come happens because it's, what, some odd 650,000 emails? I mean,
we're talking years, so yeah.
You know. You
also,
know,
God bless whatever intern has to go sit through and read and pull through all those, because for real.
God bless whatever lawyer. Oh, my God. Somebody's finna work triple, quadruple overtime, though.
Oh, no, I mean, it's going to be a law intern. Man. No lawyer's going to see. They're going to send the intern. Yeah, y'all look through them emails. Get them on my desk by tomorrow morning.
You ever heard of a 120-hour work week?
Ah, shit, man.
But I don't know if they're gonna death penalty the Washington football team, because at the end of the day, as bad as an issue this is still an issue based off character. It's not an issue based off competition. You death penalty teams when you start affecting with competition, you start affecting with the game. And I think this is why this is another tricky situation, because teams before haven't been judged off what their character is. They're judged off the results.
Yeah.
But now you're being judged off how your, you know, organization comes off. Hence why Tampa immediately took John Gruden out of the Ring of Honor, something that didn't even have to do with them. But the fact that John Gruden is a representation of that, now it's a representation of your character. And that's the biggest thing that organizations are fighting. So for them to give a death penalty to the players is going to be unfair. They're going to have so many problems with the NFLPA. And that's just going to be a whole sticky situation. And like you said, we can't even get into scheduling if we only have 31 teams, right? Now, granted, sell the team. Don't know about moving the team, because that's extra funding that really, if we're being honest, NFL has but doesn't have. The 2020 year really hurt them with no fans, for real, for real. They're not really talking about it, but it really hurt them. They had to pay a lot of players, and they're trying to make everything come back. That's why they're so focused on ratings. That's why they have the – you know, a hip-hop halftime show this year so they can get their whole audiences back. You know, that's what they're focused on.
Let's talk about that real quick, right? So we're talking about, obviously, John Gruden's and other people sending emails misogynistic, right? But the NFL is going to fund a halftime show with Dr. Dre and Snoop. God knows the lyrics that they put out. You know what I'm saying? Talking about misogynistic, I'm being for real.
Exactly, you know, like, I agree.
On what side? Where do we draw the line on the character? Because obviously we know the entertainment is entertainment. I'm a big fan, you know what I'm saying? But I acknowledge, but especially back in the – anything really before 2010, anything went, basically. Really anything went in entertainment and music. So, I mean, we're going to sit here and talk about misogynistic this, that, and the third. But then also, hey, February, come watch Snoop and come watch Snoop and Dr. Dre talk about fucking bitches in the middle of LA in our brand new stadium during the Super Bowl. You know what I'm saying?
And gin and juice and everything.
Sipping on gin and juice. Come on now.
Like, I agree.
It's just real tricky because, like, how far do you go? Like, where do you draw the line with that? And I'm not saying it's right or wrong, but it's just something that I think they have to think about when they're talking about their brand and how much they're going for character within their league.
This is something that the NFL definitely does not want on their table right now because they actually have no – I don't know if they have a game plan.
They just said, damn it, why couldn't we just go back to when people didn't have rights? Shit was so much simpler then. I know someone somewhere is actually thinking that and they're trying their hardest not to put in the email so they don't get fucking found out next. But – discussion on that. We're going to move on, though. We're going to move on real quick. So, MLB playoffs, obviously, dang. Red Sox, man.
Y'all yes, boys
in the ALCS already. Y'all boys took care of the beast of the AL. I personally had Tampa going through and running up until, you know, the Dodgers or the Braves. I thought the Braves could have maybe got a better hold of the Dodgers. But we're looking at y'all already took them out, man. And I believe y'all. Y'all 3-1 them boys. There wasn't even, you know, light work. You know what I'm saying?
Like, hey, man, look, a lot of folks, especially after game one, like, you know, I heard a lot of analysts saying that Boston was done and, you know, they don't have, you know, the firepower to keep up with the Rays. And I tell you, man, Boston is such a tradition organization, you know, a tradition of winning in situations that they don't look favored in. You know, more times than not, when we're in the playoffs, you know, and we're going to the series, we're not the beast of the AL. We're not just beating everybody. You know, we're just a put together team that comes together at the end of the season. Our bats are going crazy right now, man. You know, we're scoring, we're getting on base. You know, our slugs are getting right. I just, you know, going against the Astros, and we don't even want to get into how I feel about the Astros because I really feel like they got berated in the media years ago for no reason. I don't think that affected their play, and it's showing with their third straight.
You ain't cheating, you ain't trying.
I'm not condoning it, but when you have three straight ALC appearances, I don't think the trash can was affecting your game that much, man. So, but when you're playing the Astros, man, they got just as big as bats as you, and our pitching, we have good pitchers, but we don't, you know, our bullpen can get a little shaky at times. Our bullpen can get a bit shaky, and I need Chris Sale to be, you know, Chris Sale. I don't need him to be, you know, only pitching 2.5 innings. We have 2.5 inning Chris Sale. You know, it's gonna be a long series with Houston, man. But I'm with you though, man. You know, Sox to the series, man. Sox to the series.
Sox to the series. I think y'all have enough. Like I said, your bats have been jumping right now, and that's kind of something that I didn't expect coming into here. Because I mean, I feel like not that y'all don't have it. Y'all obviously have it. But just like I said, y'all went up against the beast and y'all ran through them. This is obviously, I think, going to affect the rest of the World Series. I think if the Giants win, I didn't have the Giants winning. I didn't have the Giants win. I had the Dodgers coming out of this one. But I think if the Giants win, the Giants are better, I think, than the – so I think the Giants are better than the Braves. And obviously the Braves are hoorah, we made it, even though all this shit's happened to us this year. You know, no Acuna. No Ozuna, you know what I'm saying? All this shit, right? So they're like, hoorah! They're kind of running on their last leg, I think. But I thought if the Dodgers got up, they could get over on them. But I don't think they can get over on the Giants. You know what I'm saying?
Nah. If Reggie has something to say, if not, you know, Giants. That's the most complete team in the league, man. That's why they have the best, you know, record in the MLB. I was really surprised to see the Dodgers the other night withstand them off, you know, 7-2. I think tonight is going to be, you know, like a 5-1 game. You know, they got their ace on the mound tonight, 10 strikeouts in the first game. You know, yes. I see him dominating tonight and, you know, go ahead and go into the next round. You know, I got the Giants and I got the Sox, you know, in the series. But honestly, truly, all bias aside, I have to give the Giants the upper hand. Just like I said, they got a full bullpen. They got experience. They got Chris Bryant. They got, you know, people on there that have championship experience. They got pitchers. It's a tough one, man. I'm not a strong believer in L.A. They finally got a ring after, you know, 7 years in the, you know, World Series. You know, yeah. It's about damn time. They got my boy Mookie Betts, which I was a little pissed about. But, Yeah.
Best player in baseball right now.
Absolutely.
Best field player in baseball. Best field
player. Absolutely. Well, you know, Tatis Jr. too. But, you know, hey, you know, we'll talk about that in a later time. But, like I said, man, I like the Giants. I do like the Giants in the NL for sure.
All right, bet. So, moving on to college football. Obviously, just came off of a pretty heavy weekend.
Yes,
we had a lot of shakeups going on. Obviously, of course, the big elephant from Alabama lost to Texas A&M. You know, first time since Johnny Manziel was there, they lost the number one spot. First shakeup in the top two this year. We got Georgia up at number one. Alabama slid back to five. Your boys at Ohio State. They're creeping their way back in. I think that Stroud is starting to find his game. The defense is obviously – I mean, y'all haven't been playing no world beaters, you know, offensively. But, I mean, you know, they're showing up a big turnaround from the first, you know, Minnesota. I think that y'all are maybe poisoning your way to come back in and sneak in.
I mean, honestly, man, look, I'm glad you brought up the Bama. I'm going to bring it up in reference to Ohio State right now. Yeah, I mean, mind you, we're the second youngest team in the nation in Power 5. Still doubt of one of the top teams in the country right now. We struggled at the beginning of the season, you know, week one, week two, really trying to find ourselves, you know, really trying to find out what we have going on. When we lost to Oregon, which I think was a damn good Oregon team, that was a very experienced team, one of the more experienced teams in the top 10 right. In college football right now. They had one of the best running backs, you know, in the nation, a very seasoned offensive line and a defense that was moving around. Granted, the number one player on the board for the NFL draft is not, you know, wasn't in the game. That defense was still dynamic. Mm-hmm. And you can still hear me?
Yeah.
Okay, perfect. So we made some adjustments after that, and, you know, I'm a Ryan Day guy, man. Ryan Day makes a lot of adjustments. He makes a lot of moves, man. And right after that game, you know, we're running single high safety man coverage against Oregon 85% of the game. And me and you being football players, man, you should know. Come on, man. Come on, man. You're running man coverage. I got a single receiver to the left. Simple motion to bring your corner in. And I'm going outside every time. They scored three times on that. We lost by one touchdown. You know, so I have a question before I continue the full synopsis of Ohio State. Do you believe that the Oregon loss is a worse loss than losing to Texas A&M with their backup quarterback?
A worse? No, not. No, it's not a worse loss because, like you said, Oregon is who they are. And the way that y'all lost, I mean, obviously that was a close fought game. Texas A&M's backup quarterback, obviously. I mean, y'all lost at home, right?
Yeah, we lost at home.
Yeah, so there's that too. I mean, obviously Texas A&M, you know, they caught Alabama at home, you know, able to get up for a game. And obviously they have a little bit of history there too. So I mean, there's a little bit more into that, you know, teams that play each other all the time versus, you know, like a one-off team like Oregon. Y'all don't play Oregon like ever. So,
yeah, we definitely don't. But also I feel like it's a, you know, I get it's teams that know you, but come on, man. We, you know, for lack of better language, they be dick riding Alabama every time, man.
Of course.
They're still talking about them like Mac Jones and Najee Harris is the 1-2 back there.
Yeah.
And I just think they've had a very close game against Florida. Yeah, they came through and handled Ole Miss, but that's because they already knew what they were getting into. And even though you knew you were coming to get into a Texas A&M game, where they said that they were going to beat your ass while you were there in media day, you knew what time it was when you were coming to College Station, because they played in A&M. They didn't play in Bama, so they played in A&M. You know, I understand it's a hostile environment, but at the same time, the talent level on the field compared to the talent level that Alabama has, it should have been, hey, what you were, a 9-point, you know, not what I think they were 11-point favorite?
Something around that.
You know, something in that range? Yeah. That's what you are. That's the team.
And obviously, you know, backup quarterback comes in and plays a game of his life. You get special teams play. You get, you know, big defensive plays finally.
But whatever the case is, being the top team in the country, you have to be able to weather the storm. There's plenty of times, even Clemson in past years, plenty of times where there's a team that's made some noise against them, but they've weathered the storm and said, hey, look, this is why we're the superior team. I think there was various times that Alabama could have closed out the game in the fourth quarter. You got the ball.
Of course, and I think it comes to experience. I mean, we're looking at just out state, super inexperienced, very young team. You know, you're talking about Bryce is a freshman. You know, they got they just replaced the whole receiving core almost. I mean, Michi's their only real receiver with
I would say Jameson Williams, transfer from Ohio State, number one. That's probably their best receiver right now. That's probably their best receiver right now. Mind you, he was our number three receiver on our roster.
Yeah. And he's better than Michi?
He's definitely better than Michi. Michi's a solid receiver. He's definitely a product of Alabama, but Jameson Williams, he's stupid fast. Yeah. I mean, I'm talking Henry Ruggs, you know, Tyreek Hill type fast. And you know, the thing I've seen him do this past offseason is his routes are a lot more crisper. He has a lot more knowledge for the concept. You know, Ohio State, he was more of a take the top off the defense type guy. Right. Granted, when you have the two top receivers in the country on your team, you know, Garrett Wilson and Chris Olave. But, you know, and that's why he transferred in the middle of the fall camp, because he already knew there's too much depth in this wide receiver room, and I'm that receiver. So, but the point is, I believe Ohio State, man, I think we get into the playoffs easily. We have such a schedule set up, you know, going forward. Four of the top 10 teams are in our conference, and we're getting ready to go into conference play. You knock off Penn State, you knock off Michigan State, you knock off Michigan, you play Iowa in the Big Ten championship, you're an automatic lock.
Big facts. That's the path for y'all.
That's an automatic lock in there. And as of right now, people are saying that Ohio State, regardless of their ranking, is still an 8-point favorite over any team in the Big Ten right now, including Iowa.
Iowa's offense has just been – Iowa's defense, let me say this up front, I think second to only Georgia. The defense is legit. You talking about y'all have the, you know, top receivers in the country. I think they have the top two corners in the country.
Well,
they got two first-round picks.
This is
a lineup on the corner.
This is the thing. Iowa, I think, is the number three defense. I'm going to give a nod here to a team that I don't really give the nod to at all. I'm going to say that Cincinnati is probably the second-best defense in college football. I've been watching them for the last 2 years, and like I said, I don't give them too much credit. But that defense, the way – you know, defense is all about assignment and pursuit.
Right.
You know, you could call the right plays, but as you know, if you could get to the ball and know where your gaps are at, you're probably going to be in good graces as a defense. That's what makes a more disciplined defense, right? So the thing about Iowa is Iowa hasn't played any real good offenses, including Penn State. I'm not a believer in Sean Clifford being one of these dominant Big Ten quarterbacks. The man just came off having the most turnovers in Big Ten history. Let's not forget about that. Right. Granted, he's doing well, but he's not like that guy. He's just a decent quarterback. He's the oldest quarterback in Big Ten right now. So I get it. He's a household name. But when you're looking at the number one overall offense in college football, putting up 56 points a game and 555 yards, I honestly don't care who you got out there, because there's only one thing about a defense that will terrorize a very well fluent offense, and that's a pass rush.
Pass rush, yes, sir.
That's a pass rush. Iowa does not have a pass rush. Not that's equivalent to the number one offensive line on paper, and by the stats and on the field. You know what I'm saying? That's why we're putting up the most. We literally have let up 3 sacks the whole season. So when I'm hearing about teams like Georgia and I'm hearing about teams like Iowa with these great defenses, my question is not about their defense, because we're going to score. We showed that in the Oregon game. We missed 3 fourth downs and still put up 30 points.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? So I'm not worried about their defense. I'm worried about, is their offense going to be able to put up enough points? In Iowa, absolutely not.
Yeah, Iowa's, their offense, I mean, honestly, I think it's first to 25, right? I don't think we're going to see them put up more than 25 points on actual competitive defenses. Not too many times. Not without the help of a special team score or defensive return score, something of that nature. Short field, you know what I'm saying, flipping the field with turnovers, something of that nature. Their offense definitely needs a boost. They need help. I'm not a huge fan of the quarterback. The run game is actually pretty nice, though. We always know that Iowa, just like everyone else in the Big Ten, they always keep the linemen up front. Iowa's usually a staple for NFL linemen. You know, you need a lineman, you dip into the well at Iowa, you go to Ohio State, you go to Wisconsin, you know what I'm saying? Those guys usually, they're staple. And this year's no different. So, for as much as I am not really a believer in the quarterback, what I do believe in is they will give him enough time to, not force mistakes. And that's what we've seen. First half of the Penn State game was god awful. It was the worst half of football that I might have ever seen from a top five, team offensively.
Right.
Started what, 1 for 9, throwing the ball, interception.
I think he was 1 for 11, if I'm not mistaken.
1 for 11? Mm-hmm. Something along that nature. And I mean, I was watching, it was damn near halftime before he got a second completion. What did he do? They started protecting them. He was able to sit back and not force things and just end up, getting on track. He wasn't panicking. Any other quarterback, they're getting pressured or panicking. Like, all I got to do is got to do that. They start giving easier completions. I think his second completion was a crosser route. Something simple, a little 5-yard, 6-yard drag. And ended up almost – and the next one was a score. And he ended up bringing them back right before halftime, brought to a 1-score game, because that defense kept him in it the whole time with the offense performing like that. And that was before Clifford got hurt, which I know is the excuse a lot of people would give it. But that was before Clifford got hurt. They were able to still keep them in the game. That's saying a lot when your offense performing that poorly and you're still within a 1-score game.
Well, I can agree with that, but a couple points there is Iowa's defense has kept them in every single game this year. Regardless if you watched the game or you looked at the highlights at the end, if you're watching Iowa's games, Patrice has struggled in every single one, maybe probably not the Maryland game, and maybe granted another one of these online schools they played. But, he's not the problem. He's not necessarily getting it done at a striking, rate. That run game that you brought up, that's their biggest asset on offense. 15, I don't know his name. Sorry about that. But
I don't know much of their names. But
this is a new power in the Big Ten. So I got to get familiar. But he's dominant. But the thing is the reason Penn State start getting scores, Iowa start getting scores, and you see Patrice start to kind of, get a little more, quote unquote, you said protected, is because they kept feeding the well to 15. They kept feeding the ball to him. And we already know that's going to eventually set up play action. But now they also had the luxury of knowing that if we give the ball to Penn State, 9 times out of 10, they're probably going to put up 3, if anything, because they're at their backup quarterback. Right. Yep. And they're not really as efficient. So your play calling is a little bit different. You know what I'm saying? You can take shots. I'll keep it a band with you right now, Marcus. You do that shit versus Ohio State, dog, you're not running the ball in the second half.
No, sir. And I know that. I know that much. I feel like y'all can. At first, I was worried, right? Early in the year, I was worried about not only your offense, but I was worried about Stroud. Stroud looked like the lights were a little bright for him. But
he looked like he was about to transfer.
Yeah. I'm saying it looked like it might have been too soon for him. You know, sometimes you get the – then, you know, he comes in. All right, but maybe not yet. Maybe he's a year early. But, I mean, first couple weeks, obviously he was struggling, but then he flipped the switch, turned it on, and I actually give Day credit for sticking with him, keeping his confidence in him, not – I mean, obviously he was tailoring some of the calls, but he was still giving him opportunities to go out and make plays. He wasn't taking the ball out of his hands. And so now five touchdowns, you know, that's confidence builders. You know, that's what you're supposed to do, especially against weaker teams. Like, I mean, yeah, you can just play to not lose, but, you know, he's giving them confidence building plays. You know what I'm saying? That's going to help, I think, when it comes down the line. He's not going to be shell-shocked like it looked like he was the first 2 weeks.
Well, I definitely agree. And, you know, I'll make note on Stroud. I was high on Stroud when, you know, he was coming into the spring. And I wasn't impressed the first couple games. And, you know, I'm an avid Ohio State watcher. So, you know how college goes with injuries. They're not very transparent with college people's injuries. It's kind of what the coaches say, and that's all they kind of give. But C.J. Stroud was dealing with a shoulder, separation problem since fall camp on his throwing shoulder. And people didn't know that because, like I said, it's not like, you know, injury reports are just given every single week like the NFL. So when he was playing Minnesota and he was playing Oregon and he was playing Tulsa, he had an injury that he was playing through. He wasn't 100%. He wasn't playing through. So when you seen him in Tulsa absolutely play probably his worst game in college football, right? And thank God for Travion Henderson coming in and, you know, being the dynamic freshman that he is and going ahead and saying, hey, I'll win the ball game for you.
But I got a bone to pick with you on him, too, but keep going.
you know, Ohio State sat C.J. Stroud after that game. They sat him for the Akron game to get his shoulder correct. And as you said, he comes back and he throws five touchdowns in back-to-back games. And it's not about the touchdowns and the yards for me. It's about the decision-making. And C.J. Stroud's decision-making has been extremely better. He's not sailing balls anymore. He's not throwing it in double coverage when he's doing the PA read. He's hitting his first read every time. He's hitting the second and third, and he's taking the dump off as well. You got Travion Henderson for 6 receptions for 47 yards last week. He wasn't even getting catches in the first part of the season, so that just shows development in your quarterback. And, you know, I just really think that injury was ailing him a little more than what people think because it wasn't exposed. But I love the people sleeping on Ohio State at the moment, you know. But, hey, man, like I said, don't be surprised if you see Ohio State, especially after Alabama loss, as the 2 seed, you know, in the college football playoff.
Because obviously, program for program, I'm taking Ohio State over us too. But I was like, man, he took a third string spot over starting. That was wild.
But he's starting now. You know,
I know he's starting now. So I'm saying I hold my peace since he's starting now. He earned his way up. But I was like, he could have been starting week one for us.
But no. I will say this. No. I will say this. This is the last thing I'll say on Ohio State. Travion Henderson, man, he wouldn't have been starting if he didn't put on some weight like he did in spring. I mean, the dude is a bowling ball. I mean, because when he was playing, and I don't know if it's because he had his last season cut off in Virginia, he didn't play his senior season. And I don't know if he's just been lifting since then. But when he was in high school, he was a little more slender. And then when he got to Ohio State and got out there to spring ball, I mean, he was just yoked.
He's like, what, like 6 foot, 220, right?
Maybe 5'10", 225. You know, 4'4", 40.
Yeah.
You know, like he's moving out there, and not only is he moving, if you hit him, you might move as well.
Yeah.
You know? So that's all I'll say. But, hey, man, college football playoff coming soon. I'll throw a little take. We ain't going to speak on it, but, hey. If Ohio State run the table, don't be surprised if you see C.J. Stroud at the Heisman finalist ceremony.
All right.
Don't be surprised.
Come on, man. You know it's way too many. It's all about Heisman's all about moments, and he hasn't had enough.
He's gonna have several coming up. Is my point.
He's had too many bad moments early. They look at that shit. The struggle. I mean, obviously, it's a part of the story. Everyone struggles, but I mean, like. Maybe next year. He'll be on the top
really
of the
he's
list
only
next year.
Really, he's only had one bad game, which is Tulsa. Because still against Oregon, he threw for 4 touchdowns, 412 yards.
I didn't say he played bad against Oregon, but he was less than impressive week one against Minnesota, and Tulsa was
first half. He threw for 4 touchdowns in the second half. So first half, yes, he was shaky. He looked like a freshman. But if you know the Heisman is off stats, man. The Heisman is off stats. The only game that he has not had three touchdown passes plus in is the Tulsa game. So I feel like if he runs the table and he keeps putting on what the offense is, you beat a Penn State, you beat a Michigan State, you beat a Michigan at Michigan, and an Iowa being the underdog in the Big Ten championship. Hey, the only reason I say that is I don't see who the front runner is now.
You know what? I'll hold you on that because there really is no front runner.
There was a clear front runner, I wouldn't even be bringing that conversation. But if you could tell me right now who you think the Heisman winner is right now, then hey.
If we're talking about Heisman, right, Kenneth Walker is like your leading rusher in the NCAA right now. So if they run the table, let's say they beat y'all, they beat Michigan, they go to the – let's say they don't even end up winning, right? Let's say they lose. They could just end up running the table, get into the Big Ten championship, a one-loss team. That's enough to get Kenneth Walker to Heisman.
No, they can't. They can't get in the Big Ten championship if they lose to Ohio State.
No, I'm saying if they lose the Big Ten championship, they just get in and they lose. Let's say they lose to Iowa, right?
Yeah.
I think that's enough for him to get the Heisman.
I don't know how many electrifying performances he's had, though. You know what I'm saying? He's had some damn good games. But, you know, when you're a running back,
same thing with Bijan Robinson from Texas.
Yeah.
That boy, he's had, if you want to talk about electric performances, he's had them. It's just Texas fucking sucks. So
I agree. Look, if you don't mind, I ask you a question. Right now, if you are in Norman, Oklahoma, who are you starting at quarterback right now?
Get that albino motherfucker out of here. I'm tired. Nah, man, I don't need it. I don't need it. Rattler hasn't shown me shit. It's been a disappointment. It's been hype from the whole QB11 shit. He's come in. He hasn't been able to carry the torch. I mean, obviously, Oklahoma's been some chokers, but normally it hasn't been because of the QB or QB had pulled. Normally because of the defense. There's been some games where he straight up just blew it, stunk it up. You know, we're talking about every game this year. Oklahoma's been fighting for their fucking life the first 5 weeks of the season. Outside of when they played, Western Carolina or some shit like that? Other than that, they are fighting for their fucking life every single week. Get him the fuck out of here. That's not your brand of football.
And I agree with you, man, because, look, they had so much hype on Spencer Rattler, and they said a comment last year that really kind of comment that Spencer Rattler would be a better quarterback than Justin Fields coming out in the draft right now, and that was last year. And I thought that was just such a wild statement, you know, for platforms to say, because the man is the only Oklahoma quarterback to have an interception in 85% of his starts. The man literally has an interception in every single start this year besides Western Carolina. You didn't see Kyler Murray doing that. You didn't see Jalen Hurts doing that. You didn't see Baker Mayfield doing that. You didn't see any of those boys throwing interceptions, let alone multiple interceptions. And then, you know, like you said, most of these years that Oklahoma is choking, it's not on, you know, the offense by any means. It's the defense couldn't stop a soul.
Yeah,
you beat a Nebraska team 23-16. You know what I'm saying? Your defense is keeping you in the game. The defense has kept you in a lot of games, but you're not producing. Spencer Rattler's not making those type of throws. Yeah, he shows flashes where, okay, he's that elite quarterback, but Caleb Williams, you come in and have 464 yards of offense in three quarters.
Like, not even a full game. Come on now, talk to
him. That's Oklahoma. That's Oklahoma right there. That's the Oklahoma we know. That's the Oklahoma we had in the college football playoff almost automatic in the preseason. Based off the ability of what their defense can do, I think this is one of the best defenses that Oklahoma's had in years past.
That too, because they've still given up 30 a game almost.
Well, I think the loss of what's his name, number 44, he had the hair coming out the helmet.
Yeah, I know you're talking about.
I think him leaving really hurt them because he was a monster on their defense last year. I ain't even gonna lie to you. The Iowa State game in the Big 12 championship, he made a big difference. But Caleb Williams, man, whew.
Interesting to see, you know, first full week of starting practice reps, and he's going to come out this week and probably going to get the job for the rest of the season. I believe. I thought it was a little interesting tidbit right there when they went back to Spencer Rattler, where they had to. We went back to Spencer Rattler for that 2-point conversion, and he ended up converting it, and they put Caleb Williams back out there to win the game.
That should have just shown Spencer Rattler right there, you know, hey.
I don't give a fuck about you.
and you know, this is the last thing I'll say on Oklahoma, but, you know, the body language of Oklahoma after Caleb Williams comes in and scores a 67-yard touchdown was very, you know, eye-popping because, you know, Rattler scored a lot of touchdowns and it wasn't quite like that. And then you thought maybe, you know, okay, you got the young guy in there. They're happy for the young guy. That's why they're going crazy. They're getting back in the game. But then when he starts scoring a lot more touchdowns and then you start seeing everybody elevate their game is when you know that, you know, is Spencer their leader or is he their media leader? You know, is the media deeming him their leader or is, you know, is he even the leader in a sense? Because you get this freshman coming in here and your whole team is playing different. Mind you, Texas damn near had 45 points at halftime. They only ended the game with 48.
Right. I think that it was, what, 38-20?
No, 55-48 was final score.
I'm saying at halftime, wasn't it 38-20?
I don't even think it was 20. I think it was 17 or something like that. It was It was bad.
That game was incredible.
It was incredibly bad.
But still, man. But yeah.
I believe that there's some room for growth for them. Honestly, that QB change might be what's keeping Oklahoma around. They haven't really dropped any,
even though I think they should have. I think they should have been out the top 10 a long time. The same time that y'all and Clemson dropped out the top 10, I thought Oklahoma should have been slid at the same time. But, yeah, this might be what they need to keep them afloat. You know, sometimes it just takes a quarterback change. It happened with Clemson back in 2018. It happened with Alabama in the championship game. You never know.
And that zero loss is just really the only thing that's keeping them afloat because so many other teams are losing. The fact that you have zero losses just gives you the advantage off default. And that's the only reason I feel like they're even still considered in the top five, top 10, you know, range. We're going to say something about the Thursday night matchup. Let's touch on the Thursday, man.
Look. That's easy money, man. I don't have no faith. I know the Eagles just beat us. They beat us. But turnaround, quick week, Sunday to Thursday. Experienced teams usually can handle it better. That Bucks team is full of veterans, obviously. The champions, obviously. Back on their bullshit. Saw what they did this past Sunday. I think they're coming in roll.
But I do think the Eagles' interior pass rush gives Brady some problems. Their defense is legit. It's just, you know, I don't see Jalen Hurts going in here and scoring on this defense. But they do have some holes in the secondary that I'm a little worried about, you know, for Tampa. I don't want them to keep the game close with Philly because that's exactly what we did.
Yeah.
But I think they end up pulling it off. I think it's something like 31-17.
Yeah, if I'm going to have to put a score on it, I might not even give them 17, bro. I think we're looking at something like 35-10, 35-13. I just don't see it happening. Short week, all on the offense. Obviously, this defense is, as it is, built up front. They're not going to let you run. They're not just not going to do it. So they're going to make you test the secondary. You basically got to have an extended, you know, run game through your screen game. It's really the only you can do is what Dallas did. Obviously, we saw week one when they played on Thursday night against the Bucks, and they threw the ball, 60 times almost with Dak?
Damn near.
That's what it's going to take, I think, on a short week. But you're not installing anything for this defense up front. You know, that best front four, I think, in the NFL right now, eliminating the run. So – and I just don't think Jalen Hurts has enough weapons, has enough himself to get it done on that level. Not this quick of a turnaround. Maybe off of a bye week, they could scheme some shit up for him, catch some, you know, off guard. But I don't think so on a Thursday night. I think it's going to be relatively simple. You know, Brady is just going to do what he does. This is business as usual for him. Although I'll give the Eagles their credit, though. Like you said, they do have a very strong defense. especially up front. Fletcher Cox, Sweat, Graham.
Hargraves,
you know, they're real. That is no slouch group that you're going up against either.
Just a fun fact, though. Philly is 6-0 on the last six Thursday night games, and this game is in Philly.
It is. So, and, you know, I saw there was a stat. It was an overwhelming favorite for being at home during the – regardless of record. Being at home on Thursday night. So
Lincoln Financial is a place, man. That's not an easy place to win at, man.
Traveling, because it's traveling on the short week. You know what I'm saying? Because you're leaving on Wednesday, you know.
Yeah, and Brady hasn't practiced all week with the thumb. I think you see the Bucks struggle in the first half, and I think they come back and figure it out. That's why I got 31-17.
I got you. That's pretty accurate. I'm gonna just give you this real quick for the Panthers game. Obviously, we're both Panthers fans. We don't really got to talk about nobody else. Vikings. You know, we had terrible performance this past week. We just talked about Sam Darnold, worst performance of his time in Carolina here. I know you saw a little of the back and forth that I was getting to with some people on Twitter about that. Not going to get too deep into that, but what do you think? Do you think he has a bounce back game, or you think more of the same?
I think we have a bounce back week. I think Philly was supposed to be a bounce back week, but I think players got too comfortable, man. You know, they were seeing the same thing that they've been seeing. They dominate teams in the first half, and they figured, you know, this is not one of those teams that we should be afraid of. And we let them slip up and come back. And, you know, they made a couple plays, and that's how you lose. But in term, I'm liking the things I'm hearing at practice. I'm loving the intensity. I'm loving the veteran pieces that we added, the way they're talking at practice. I think we're just going to come back.
They're a good team. They're probably
a couple plays away from being undefeated. But we're talking about Kirk Cousins, man. We're talking about Kirk Cousins with Hassan Riddick and Brian Burns coming at him all afternoon. Kirk Cousins hasn't done well versus Carolina. Granted, a little bit last year, but even last year was, you know, that was more offense turning the ball over. It wasn't even really too much, you know, Kirk Cousins doing what he needs to do. So with this same defense, you know, with this defense being what it is this year, I believe we have some success. You know, one fact that I did not quite know about the Vikings is that they're number two in the league in sacks, with 16. That's the only thing that gives me a concern is because, you know, offensive line last couple weeks has been, you know, kind of shaky, you know, on the pass rush. But, you know, you get Irvin back, you get Eflin back, and, you know, granted, if you don't like some of those guys or not.
Irvin fucking sucks.
Those are still no, Irvin definitely is trash. But I don't like Moten. I don't like Moten at left. He needs to stay at right. And I think that's what fucked us up last week.
He's right-handed, man. I think people need to understand that, like, just because he's good, you know, some people are legit right and left-handed when it comes to offensive line.
That's why he's played right guard at Western Michigan, and that's why, you know, he played on the right side when he came to the NFL. So, I mean, I see what you're trying to do. You're not trying to throw, you know, Brady Christensen on the hot seat and say, hey, protect the blind side. But that wasn't the move. I think that fucked up the whole feng shui of things on the line with Moten being over there on the left. So hopefully we get it back over there to the right this week. And I can see us winning, you know, on a clip of maybe 31-24, man.
Man, look, when it's come to great Brady Christensen, man, look, we drafted you as the highest graded left tackle in college football. Strap your nuts on, man.
Yeah.
Get to it. Like, that's what the fuck you here for. And if it's a coaching decision, like, that's what the fuck we brought him here for. Ain't no need to be holding niggas up. Well, maybe he'll be more comfortable. No, you drafted him as the highest graded for whatever the fuck PFF is worth. You know, you drafted him as the highest graded left tackle in college football. You let that motherfucker go and prove what he earned. You know what I'm saying? Like, he earned that. You let him go prove that. And if he's not ready, then fuck it. He's not ready. But you don't sit there and talk about, well, maybe he's more comfortable on the other side. Maybe this, maybe that. No, man. If that's the case, if you had to do all that with him, fucking go get an actual left tackle. Well, don't play all the fuckery, man. I don't like the fuckery.
I think last week was just an experiment for Matt Rhule last week.
3-1 is not the time to be experimenting, man. I'm sorry. Like, you 3-1, you know. There's a big difference. I mean, just like we talk about it all the time. Obviously, this is football, not basketball. We talk about time, that game five when you're up, you know, 2-1. You know, it's a big difference between 3-1 and 2-2. It's a big difference between 3-1 and 3-2. You know what I'm saying? You can close the series out or you bring it back when niggas think they have a chance.
I agree.
3-2 doesn't sit well. I know we're talking about a 17-game season now, but, I mean, we're sitting a whole lot – feeling a whole lot better about the season at 4-1 through five games than we are sitting at 3-2, because 3-2 is, well, we a play here, a play there away from having a losing record, right? Versus a, all right, we 4-1, we play here, play there from being undefeated. It's a whole different mindset between 3-1 and 3-2. And I don't like that we fucking around like that.
Well, I mean, I don't think that was a choice that we had, though, bro. We're so injured. You know, that is literally probably the weakest spot on our team is the offensive line. And, I mean, we just don't have the pieces. And we've had, you know, the left tackle is the most, you know, they have the biggest responsibility on the line. Coming from a former left tackle, I'm letting you know.
Right.
They have the most responsibility on the line. So, I get it that we drafted him as the number one, you know, off, you know, left tackle is what he played in college. But this draft was a lot of linemen that were interchangeable. Even if, you know, we were going to draft Rayshon Slater was looked at as a guard by, you know, a lot of teams.
He was. You know? He's a fucking stud.
And he's a stud. You know, he's a stud. I still don't think that we should have took him over J.C. Horn. I don't think that. But, you know, he's a stud. He's like that. But with us right now, you know, last week, I'm not opposed to the option of going to Moten because Moten is that guy. He's versatile like that. But we saw last week that he's not as strong on the left as he is the right. And I think you're better off leaving him on the right and letting Brady Christensen just go through the, you know, trials and tribulations of, hey, you got to block some of the best pass rushers in the league. And that's what we drafted you for. Now, yep. The person that I'm really kind of, you know, I want to come along, you know, I don't know what's up with his development. Or anything right now, but I think he's one of our best interior linemen, and I think it's Deonte Brown.
Yeah. I don't know what's going on back there.
I don't know what's going on, but I feel like if we get his wheels turning, the man's a fucking monster, dog.
He's a
motherfucking tank, and if CMC or Chuba or anybody can get behind that bitch running the ball, hey, you saw the holes he's opening up at Bama, man. It's the same size type people, man. He's moving fuckers out the way. So I don't know if it's a thing with conditioning or if his weight is not big enough for him to move at the speed of NFL. But we'll see. But like I said, man, 31-24, I think we get the dub this week, man.
I'm hoping for a dub. I have us actually winning this game. I rarely pick us to lose. I picked us to lose a Dallas game because I didn't think that we were going to be able to score with them, and that ended up being what happened. I thought we would win this last game. We pissed it away.
But we did.
Barring something like that happening again, I think this defense has more pride, more attitude in it than to let something like that happen twice. It wasn't the defense's fault, obviously, but, I mean, you know, they take that kind of shit. Anytime you lose a lead late, the defense takes it personally, whether it was their fault or not, right? So I feel like we got the kind of, you know, niggas with attitude on the team. They're not going to let that shit slide 2 weeks in a row. Probably still no Dalvin Cook. We're going to have Madison, who's actually been balling. Justin Jefferson is my biggest concern right now. Thielen's usually, you know, a big playmaker against us because we don't have strong CB2s normally. But Jefferson and Thielen, kind of where I'm looking at, might be our biggest challenges. But on the other side of the ball, I feel like we have a slight advantage outside. We're going to be able to have to spread the ball around. Can't be spamming DJ Moore too much. He's as great as he's been. Going to have to see some Terrace Marshall play. Going to have to see some Robbie Anderson. Going to have to see some Chuba out the backfield. I know they've experienced DJ out the backfield too, but still,
I like all of
them. Got to spread it around. You know what I'm saying? Trimble, I actually like. They've been getting Trimble involved. I'm not mad at that. Just like I said, the more options, the better, because the offense starts to get a little stale when you know it's McCaffrey. Well, when he's healthy, McCaffrey, DJ, or bust, and that's kind of what Joe Brady kind of starts settling into. When things get a little off schedule and it gets real stale, real predictable, it puts Sam Darnold in a tough position to where he's basically, hey, get it here, get it there, and if it's not there, oh well. So, yeah, it's a little more creativity, take the pressure off of Darnold. Obviously, we don't need him getting that pass rush is going to be after him. Our offensive line is kind of in shambles right now, still trying to piece it together as we go along. So as long as we can get the ball out of his hands quick and on time, I like our chances with our playmakers on the outside. So I think a similar, you know, score, 30-28, I think probably going to be closer than that because I think they can actually get some points up on us. But hopefully we just get some – we got a turnover or two, you know what I'm saying? That's what it's going to come down to. We need Kirk Cousins to, like, Kirk Cousins to give us some turnovers.
I think he's going to Kirk Cousins it this week. I think he's going to be the guy that we knew who he was.
And it's about time, too. I need it.
For sure, man.
But anyways, appreciate you, Dame. Fucking fantastic energy. Anytime, bro. You can come back on and we can chop this shit up again, man.
Absolutely,
Reggie,
man.
Reggie said it too. You're fantastic energy. We love it here. Right on brand with us. You, Keyshawn, Chris, Bam. I'll be coming back, regular anytime. I'll start hitting you up messages too, seeing when you're available. Because this is the kind of shit we need, man. I like the rotation we got.
Hey. I'm here for whatever, man. Look, put me on whatever you need me to. If y'all got a little group chat where y'all talk sports, man, add me to it, man. I love to talk throughout the week for sure, man. So we can definitely get into that.
I got you. Hey, man. This is episode 83 of the Pickup Podcast. Chris, sorry, man. Had some technical difficulties with 82. It got axed. Some of it was, on my end. So I apologize for that. Chris put up a very good episode last week that wasn't able to get out. We had a fantastic conversation, and I'm gonna have to get back up with him again, make sure that we get that get it back for the one time. You know what I'm saying? Maybe you can join us on that one too, because when I talk with Chris, it's mostly a lot of betting talk. Lines,
and scores, and stuff. I'm gonna get you in onto it, man.
We're gonna plug you in
for sure.
But yeah, podcast, we out. Holla at your boys. You know, my, you know, my, you know, my, you know.